This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And 'tis a glorious day when I have an Irishman on my program. So today is a glorious day. I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Jack Kavanagh. And the name of the book is Always Ireland, An Insider's Tour of the Emerald Isle. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Patsy. It's lovely to be with you.
Oh, I love it. I love it. You haven't lost your accent. I tell you, it was so funny. When I first got to England, I was very young, and all my girlfriends would say, oh, you know, the French accent. Let's go to Paris. And I would say, not me. It's the Irish that gets me, I tell you.
Well, I've been living in the States for quite a while now, but it hasn't really rubbed off. I've had the edges, you know, smoothed, but not. I still quite haven't got the American accent.
Oh, thank God, because there's nothing like the Irish accent. I think it is so sexy. It is just, I think it is the sexiest accent, and I tell you, it turns out if you go to Ireland, girls, you'll find out that Irishmen are full of Irish, I can tell you.
Well, I'll tell you, there's 32 different varieties of Irish accents. So, you know, if American women are looking for sexiness, go to Ireland and you'll get your fill of it, because it's very interesting to go around the country because every single county has its own accent. You know?
Oh, I know. It's you know, it's so wonderful. As I said, I had an Irish girl on, and well, woman, I don't know what I was. She was writing kids' books anyway, and she's a girl, so I call her again. And you know, I was so hoping she'd have an Irish accent, but she came to America, and my goodness, I tell you, she sounded more Texan than Irish.
Oh, really?
Hey, why would you want to lose it when you've got it so beautiful?
I suppose so. Yeah, they say that County Cork is the Texas of Ireland, because it's got its own way of thinking and its own way of. It's very independent. It's called the Rebel County, County Cork. You know, when I talk to my friends who claim Cork ancestry, I said, be careful there, you know. It's not really Ireland at all. If you go into Cork City, Patsy, they'll tell you, they'll welcome you to the real capital of Ireland, you know. So.
Yeah, I know. Well, I had the joy, of course, of traveling to Ireland. And as a matter of fact, there are only, if I was going to go back to Europe now, so I don't want to travel and I don't want to get on an airplane yet, the travel is so difficult. But
I know.
The only places that I want to go back to Ireland, and mm-hmm. then I want to go on the Danube cruise. That's the only thing. That's the only thing I want to do back in Europe. And the trip to Ireland is such a nice. It's actually a very easy trip. A wonderful, wonderful destination. You have so much to do in Ireland, and of course, in your book, you bring it all out, and I love it. It's just a grand book, and it's a National Geographic book, and as always, top quality. Everything mm-hmm. is beautifully done. Mm-hmm. Wonderful photography, and then all the things that you want us to know about Ireland.
That's right. It's kind of it was a step away from the traditional travel guide, Patsy, because we figured that most of the information, like the booking information, etc., all that practical stuff, you can get it all online now anyway. The world has gone online, it's gone digital. So we wanted this book, Always Ireland, to be more of an aspirational travel book. So I call it a dreamer's guide to Ireland, or a daydreamer's guide to Ireland. Daydreaming is very big in Ireland, as I'm sure you know. One of my great mentors in journalism, a man called a sports writer called Con Hula, and he had a great line. He said, daydreaming is good for you. In other words, everyone should do it. So this is a book that people might buy 6 months or a year before going to Ireland and have it on the table. And whenever you feel like dreaming about Ireland and thinking about what you'll do there, just pick it up and you can dip into it. It's not a cover-to-cover book. You can dip into it, get little stories in Irish history, Irish culture, Irish food. We put a few recipes in there for, you know, stews and various particularly Irish things from particularly Irish counties. regions, and just little things on what to expect and some off the beat path tips and that kind of thing. So you can dip into it and you can daydream and you can plan your vacation in Ireland in a very kind of informal way.
Yes, there's a recipe for box tea in there.
That's right, box tea, yeah, which was a way of using up all the scraps in olden times.
Well, not you know, when I first traveled in early days, when I was traveling, I was young and poor, and box tea is wonderful.
Oh, it is, yeah.
It's absolutely fantastic.
It's kind of like an omelet. You can throw anything into it, really. Anything goes, but it's lovely, and one of the nice stories I discovered doing this book was that Ireland has had a complete food revolution since, I said, probably the last 30 years. What happened was Irish chefs went abroad and they trained in places like Paris and Stockholm, all these places, Japan, and they realized that they weren't really putting their best foot forward in the world in terms of Irish cuisine, because they actually had some of the best ingredients in the world. You know, Ireland's the Emerald Isle, it's got fantastic amounts of rainfall and green fields and great, great dairy as a result. So they came back, all these chefs, and they've really upped the game now. Ireland is a real food destination now, which is fabulous. You know, I'm really pleased about that.
For me, it was always a destination for food, because it's, as you said, the ingredients are so fresh. I mean, they've got the fish, they've got...
Exactly, yeah.
And
yeah.
We go into lamb...
Yeah, the good lamb stew, yeah. Oh. I give a recipe for, I think it's a beef and Guinness stew in County Kerry, in the Kerry section of the book, but I also give a shout-out to Kinsale in County Cork, which is the Irish capital of cuisine, really. And if you go to Kinsale, and you can go into any restaurant there, and they'll have the most fantastic fish menus, because it's all so fresh, it's straight off the boat. The last place I was in was a restaurant called Fishy Fishy, and it was marvelous. It was just absolutely fantastic. So it's great now. I mean, even if you go to the Aran Islands, you can get a world-class meal. There's Inishman restaurant out there. It's a restaurant and farm stay, and they've set up these farm stays, and all the produce is grown there, even though the Aran Islands are very barren, and, you know, the fields of the Aran Islands are fertilized famously by seaweed, because there's not a lot of topsoil there. But even somewhere as remote as that, you can get a fabulous meal now. So Ireland has really, really changed, you know.
Always, when you have fresh ingredients, and you don't need a lot of sauces on Irish food, it's just so good.
That's right, yeah. It's simple fare. It's not dolled up like say, French food is or that. It's just, you know, good, hearty fare. And, of course, you got, as I said, you got the great dairy produce, like, you know.
Yes. Well, I still buy Irish butter. I have Irish.
Oh, me too, yeah.
I have Irish butter in my refrigerator right now.
My wife teases me because every time she opens up the freezer, there's more Kerrygold there. I keep buying the golden bars of Kerrygold. You know, it's like a bank vault, because I see it on sale and I'll buy a whole load and throw it in. And she says, "What are you worried about? Like the world run out of butter?" But you can't beat the Irish butter. It's like
no, you can't. You know, I as a baker, I wouldn't bake anything without Kerrygold butter. So
yeah,
we're putting an advertisement for them. They have to sponsor Joy on Paper, because I have my, it's in my refrigerator too, because I've been doing some baking recently, and that's what I reach for all the time.
Yeah, you're right. I should have got a sponsorship deal with them as well, because I just realized that I put Kerrygold butter in all the recipes, but I never thought of getting in touch with them. But there you go. Anyway, they are great. It's a great product. Fabulous butter.
So, well, when you get it, well, go ahead and get in touch with them and tell them about Patsy with a Z. And boy, I will.
They might send us each a crate of butter. Wouldn't that be fabulous, Patsy?
well, we would love it. We would love it and put it to good use. I can
indeed,
tell you.
Indeed, it wouldn't go twice in our house, that's for sure.
So, and you know, the wonderful thing about Ireland is, of course, there's Dublin. Everybody, you know, wants to go to Dublin. And, of course, you know, for me, when I was young, it was James Joyce. You know, I had to go, and I went with a bunch of friends a couple of times, and they tried to go around.
Oh, and all the sites,
and
yeah.
Do the day. But, you know, in those days, one was drinking. Now, I lived in England. I moved to England when I was 21. I bought a house in England. A cottage.
Whereabouts in England?
In Sonning, near Henley.
Oh, lovely.
In a little village. Yeah. It was a 400-year-old cottage.
Beautiful.
Yes, and it had wet rot and dry rot. And
kind of rot. Well, you know, it's authentic then, right?
Oh, I did. You know, when I came from America, from northern Michigan. We never heard of rot.
Exactly,
any rot.
A rising damp. That was another great one.
Oh, yes. I had it all. But, you know, when you get in Ireland, to get outside of Dublin is also fantastic. But you could tell us, what do you want to tell us about Dublin, just so, you know, my listeners can get the...
Well, speaking of Dublin, I'm kind of excited now because next month I'm going to launch this book in Europe in a little tiny Joyce Museum, which you may have passed it because it's actually a scene in Ulysses. And it's a place called Sweeney's Pharmacy. It's on Lincoln Place. And Sweeney's Pharmacy... it's famous in the book because Leopold Bloom, the main character, goes in to buy a bar of lemon soap for his wife. And about 10 years ago, this was celebrated, of course, ever since in Sweeney's, but about 10 or 20 years ago, I think it was on the verge of closing down, like all little shops. But they kept it alive as a James Joyce Museum, which is great. So it's a tiny little place, holds about 20 people, but we're going to launch the book in there. And the proprietor of Sweeney's is a man called PJ Murphy, and PJ's fantastic. We bring all our tours through there. I did a National Geographic Expeditions tours, and it's one of the first places we go because PJ gets out the guitar. He'll give a song from Joycean times, you know, the early 1900s, and we'll do readings from the book. It's just lovely introductions, lovely way, kind of quiet way to, you know, you're just straight off the plane and you get into the whole culture and the history of Ireland. It's a really fabulous place. So I'd encourage any of your listeners to head for Sweeney's. And then the other thing, the other secret that we bring them to, it's not really a secret, but I get a laugh out of it, to be honest with you, Patsy, because I'm from Dublin originally, or Wicklow, but I have a dark sense of humor because of that. And you know the famous James Joyce short story called The Dead?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the best known of all them. Well, the first thing we do to our guests who are straight off the plane from New York or Chicago or wherever, is we bring them to see a whole load of dead bodies, believe it or not, actual dead bodies. These are the bog bodies that were dug up from the bogs, a lot of them from the Bronze Age, and we don't really know why they were there, but we think they might have been sacrificed. But anyway, they're in the Museum of Archaeology Ireland in Dublin, and it's a fascinating exhibition. I think it's called The Sacrifice, and I forget the actual name, but it's to do with the sacrifices that these people were thought to be leaders who were sacrificed to the gods and buried in the bogs. But they're so well preserved because the bogs, the quality of the bog water has no oxygen in that, so the hair is perfectly preserved. The skin is like leather, but it's an amazing thing to see. You're looking at history, you know, and that's one of the first things we do in Dublin, and it's well worth seeing. Of course, you know, it's the Kingship and Sacrifice Exhibition. That's what it's called, the Kingship and Sacrifice Exhibition. So I know most people go to the Book of Kells in Trinity College, but the library there is currently being renovated for a year or two. So if you can't get into that, then it might be hard to get tickets. Go and see the bog bodies instead. That'll be my tip for Dublin.
Oh, there's so much to see. It is somehow Ireland is a more relaxing trip than going to the continent.
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more with you, Patsy. And this is what I tell everyone. Everyone's saying, "What, you know, what should I do? Where should I go? And what's the best tip you can give me to travel, particularly first-time travelers? Because you know you've been there. You know the ethos of Ireland, it's very laid back in that. But what I always tell them is take a day to do nothing. Take a day to just wander around and talk to people because, you know, rushing from site to site to site, everyone wants to see things, you know, when they're on vacation and do things. But Ireland is such a great place that you could miss the trees for the wood, if you like, by rushing around. And what I mean by that is that one of the real treasures of Ireland is its people. It's got lovely scenery, it's got great history, it's got great literature. All that is brilliant and worth seeing. But I think the real treasure of Ireland is, you know, its people. And what I mean by that is that we still have the time to talk, you know. And Irish people love talking, as you well know, Patsy, right?
Oh, yes. It is the most delightful thing.
Yeah, and you can just stop by the side of a road and talk to a guy for half an hour. And, you know, I always say, don't use GPS. You know, like, get lost deliberately, because you'll meet people that way, you know. Like, you stop by the side of the road and you'll have a great chat with people and you'll find out about the locality. And, you know, you might be on your way to Galway and have taken a wrong turn and say, you know, how do I get to Galway? And he might say to you, well, what are you going to Galway for? There's a great musical session down here in O'Flaherty's tonight. Why don't you stay for that? And, you know, you'll stumble on these things. But Irish people do love to talk, and they're very welcoming, but they're also good listeners, because they're interested in people. They'll be interested in where you're from and the world. Irish people have gone abroad for centuries, of course. There's 5.4 million of them on the island, and there's 20 million of us, you know, abroad. I also try and tell that story in the book, In Always Ireland, of the Irish abroad and the mark they've had on the world, you know?
Oh, yes. Mention the lantern in the window.
Oh, the lantern in the window. That's a lovely story. So, traditionally, in old Ireland, people used to leave a candle in the window, particularly on dark, stormy nights, you know, because there'd be travellers out and about, and they might get lost, and they might be freezing cold, and they'd be in need of sustenance and warmth. So leaving a candle in the window is a way of saying, you're welcome here, you know, we'll give you shelter for the night. And in the early 90s, when Mary Robinson was president of Ireland, our first woman president, we've subsequently had a couple, but she came up with this lovely idea that she would leave a candle in the window of Áras an Uachtaráin, which is our White House, the presidential palace, in the Phoenix Park in Dublin. So she leaves the candle lit at all times in the window, and it's for the emigrants, of the exiles from Ireland, the 20 million of us who are out here in the world, dreaming a home, I suppose. But it's lovely, because, you know, I show this to the tour groups, but I also kind of feel it's there for me as well. It's like, you know, welcome home, you're always welcome. So that's a really nice tradition. I'm really glad Mary Robinson did that, you know.
Yeah, I thought that was nice. It's so Irish.
Yeah, it is.
You know, the name of my program is Joy on Paper. And if you want to go to a country where you find more people who are joyous, you can't find anything better than Ireland. Because even in your voice, you can hear it. I immediately feel more relaxed. I'm ready for anything.
Yeah, and the other thing, the other part of that equation, Patsy, is that joy on paper. Like, we're huge on literature. You know, if you think of Dublin, the first thing most people do in Dublin is they go and see a book. They don't go and see a building or a famous boulevard. The big attraction there is a book, you know. The Book of Kells. And then the other big attraction is what you did. You went over for Bloomsday, right? For Ulysses.
Yes.
You know, so we actually take a whole day, like a feast day, and we celebrate a work of fiction. You know, where else does that happen in the world, that you're walking around, you know, celebrating fictional characters who never existed? But it's great. It's lovely. And again, it's a kind of welcoming thing, because Bloom was famously the Wandering Jew. You know, he was Jewish. He was a kind of outsider in Irish society, but it's about him fitting in and him being welcomed and him, you know, feeling his way in. So there is that thing of the outsider in Ireland, which is always being welcomed. And a lot of it's to do with exile and forced exile, like James Joyce went into exile famously, you know. But he always, all he ever wrote about was Dublin, right? You can leave Dublin, but Dublin never leaves you, you know, or Ireland, you know.
Well, that's it. And, of course, we know that well in America, wherever you go. It's, we have Irish, and it's, you have given so much to the world, really. The poetry, I'm glad you mentioned the music. I love Irish music. Again, there's something in it, the lyrics, the lyricalness of it, everything about it, it changes. I think your heart rate changes when you're in Ireland.
Yeah, it's like, it's the ultimate mood enhancer, you know. It's very hard to go to an Irish pub and sit there listening to a session going on and not come away in a good mood. Exactly. You know what I mean? It's not. It's extraordinary. I do also point out a lot in the book the links between Ireland and America musically, because of course when all the emigrants left Ireland from the 1840s onwards, they brought all their fiddles with them, and they brought all their barons, you know, the handheld drum with the goatskin, and they brought all these instruments with them. And the Scots-Irish before that as well, they've been emigrating since the 1700s, I guess. And they ended up, you know, in places like West Virginia, and they kept playing the fiddles, and then that evolved into bluegrass, and that evolved into country music. And there's a lovely story I came across while writing the book about Paddy Maloney, who was the leader of the Chieftains musical, you know, one of the greatest musical bands in Ireland. Paddy died last year, sadly, but he famously arrived in Nashville, I suppose, in the 70s, and he said that he instantly felt like he was just in another town in Ireland because the music was so familiar, you know, in the country and western music. And that's something that our guests are always amazed with, like how much we love country and western, but it's kind of, it's just coming full circle, you know. It's like Johnny Cash going back to Ireland or going to Ireland for the first time in 1958, and he felt at home, and he wrote the instant Irish classic 40 Shades of Green, you know. So it's a big circle, you know. The music has gone out into the world, and it's starting to come back as well, you know.
And there's something, well, you have poetry in your voice, in your language, in your, it's all around you when you go to Ireland, and you never know when you're sitting next to somebody in a pub or sitting in the countryside, suddenly somebody who, it's most unexpected, you might be sitting, you know, I remember we one time, you know, we stopped along in a beautiful spot, and along comes a farmer, and you know, gets into talking to us, and of course he had cousins in every place in America.
In America, yeah, so, yeah, that's always the way.
And then he just starts, you know, reciting poetry, not reading it. It's in his bones. It's in his heart.
Yeah, everyone's a poet in Ireland, but a lot of that's, Patsy, has to do with the Irish language. The Irish language is very poetic, you know. So people say, like, why do you speak so weirdly in Ireland? You know, what's with you Irish? You know, and the reason is that a lot of the reason is, particularly in the west of Ireland, you know, these people have in their DNA the Irish language, so they actually think in Irish before they actually say it in English. You know, they have a way of translating it back into English. You know, I'll give you an example. The have you seen the Banshees of Inisherin? The new film.
No, I didn't see it. No.
It's a lovely film. It's a dark film, but it's kind of a very funny film. but anyway, it's about one of the characters, a musician in the Iron Islands, and he is talking to the other main character, and he wants to say, you know, what I've been doing since last Tuesday, since we last met, is composing this song. But he doesn't say, I made this song or I composed this song. He says it in Irish through English. He says, well, you know what I did since last Tuesday? This I made. You know, it's a different way of putting it, but it's an Irish way of putting it, you know. But that's a lot of the reason for the kind of poetry in Ireland is that it comes through the Irish language. I'll tell you a funny story. I one of the people I interviewed for the book, or I really wanted to interview for the book, was a famous Irish poet called Michael D. Higgins, you know. And I had a devil of a time getting Michael D. Higgins people to hook up with me on the phone because he was such a busy man. And all I wanted to do was talk about poetry and talk about the west of Ireland, where he's from, you know. But the reason, of course, that he was difficult to track down or difficult to hook up with on the phone was that he's president of Ireland now. our president is a poet, you know. So eventually, the time he called, I was out on the Iron Islands, the windswept Iron Islands, up on a cliff top, and I could barely hear him. I was cupping the cell phone to my ear, you know, desperately trying to jot down his words. And it was a kind of surreal scene. I was heading into the wild Atlantic Ocean, you know, underneath a stone wall, trying to take notes of what the President of Ireland back in our White House was saying down a phone, you know. And I thought, it's kind of funny, we didn't mention his job at all or anything like that. He just wanted to talk about poetry, you know. So it would be a bit like, I suppose, you know, taking a call from Joe Biden and only talking about it, driving his Corvettes around Delaware or something like that. It's a bit surreal, but I got a kick out of it, you know.
Well, it was funny you mentioned that film is a little dark. Well, there's a dark part of the Irish personality, too.
Oh, yeah.
But there's also this wonderful, I love this chapter that you have, The Chemistry of Love.
The Chemistry of Love, that's to do with County Clare, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And that was a surprise to me, because Clare is about music and it's kind of wild, windswept place. So, but of course, they have a new perfumery and bang in the middle of the burn, which is this, you know, limestone landscape, very kind of desolate with all these wildflowers, and it's a beautiful place. And it's kind of the perfumes are inspired by the place. But the other big thing about Clare, of course, is that it has the Liston Varna Festival and the Liston Varna Matchmaking Festival every September, I think it is. And you know about that, Patsy, do you?
Uh-huh.
There's a man with a book. He's got the book of love, you know, and he writes down everyone who's looking for love. So you might be matched with somebody who came to Liston Varna 5 years ago, but it's all done, you know, through the book. Very, very old school way of doing it. There's no online dating or all that, and this man will put you in touch with, you know, he'll match you up, and you'll go and you'll have a dance with this potential partner. There'll be bands every night playing in the little village of Liston Varna. It's very special. It's absolutely lovely. So Willie Daly is the man's name, the current keeper of Liston's Book of Love, you know. So if you're looking for love in September, head to Liston Varna, County Clare.
Well, that is definitely a destination. A destination trip for somebody. And, of course, in all throughout the book, you have these places, you know, where to stay and eat and drink.
Yeah.
And especially to drink. And you are not at a loss to find the places.
No, you'll never have to go far for a drink or to hear people talk in Ireland. They're the two things that you'll get plenty of, you know.
Oh,
but it's all good fun. Actually, if I can mention, I was writing this morning on my Instagram account, and the Instagram, if anyone wants to look it up, is @JKGlobalText, @JKGlobalText. But the reason I bring it up is because I was I did a few interviews on the radio during the past week, and everyone asked me what my favorite pub in Ireland is, you know, or where should I go for a tip. So I promised everyone I would put up a post about what I consider to be the world's greatest pub. So it's up there if you want to go and look it up at JK Global Text, the world's greatest pub.
Okay, well, I'm sure. I have a lot of listeners who they're always interested in where to drink. So, and of course, when I moved to England, coming from Northern Michigan, I had never even heard of a gin and tonic.
Oh, yeah. Lovely drink.
Lovely drink. And in those days, that's when the pubs closed, you know, after lunch, which was...
Oh, that's right, yeah. Well, in Ireland, that was called the Holy Hour. I don't know why it was called the Holy Hour, but you know, I was supposed to go on prayer or something.
Well, I don't think so. I think that...
yeah, there wasn't much praying done in that era.
I think there was something else going on. But it was a lovely thing.
It was,
You knew that the innkeeper was having a holy hour, and you would be sitting outside waiting
That's
to
right.
get in.
That's
and
right.
I'll tell you, that first drink, when the door opened finally, you know...
It was lovely,
That was the loveliest drink of the day.
Absolutely. The other thing that used to happen in the pubs in Ireland a lot, of course, was that hour would be observed in a typically subversive Irish way. I talk a lot about this in the book, that we're a subversive race because, you know, we were occupied for so long. So the Irish answer to, you know, the pubs closing for an hour or whatever it was would be just to close the door, you know, and lock the door and tell everyone to shut up, you know, be quiet now, you know. So you'd have a very, very quiet room of drinkers for an hour. But I remember actually when I lived in Dublin, I'll tell you a quick story, that Ireland were playing England in 1988, huge soccer match. It was the first time we'd ever qualified for the European Champions. This was the game everyone had been waiting like 6 months for. It was, you know, the enemy. We were playing the enemy. And this kicked off at 3 o'clock. So all the pubs were supposed to close between 3 and 4, you know. So I remember being in a pub in Dublin called the Leeson Lounge. And so the match kicks off at 3 o'clock. At 6 minutes past 3, the most famous goal of in Irish soccer history was scored, because, you know, we bet England 1-0. And that goal went in 6 minutes into holy hour. And at just at that moment, a guard, a policeman, knocked on the door of the Leeson Lounge to check that, you know, everyone, the premises had been vacated, shall we say. So, of course, the goal went in. There was an almighty roar inside, you know. And the guard's reaction was, I can tell there's no one here, so I leave you alone. Okay. And the barman confirmed that there was no one here, as everyone was going absolutely wild inside. And the door was quietly closed, and he went his way, and that was it, you know.
I love it. I love it. Again, this book is wonderful. It's called Always Ireland, and it is An Insider's Tour of the Emerald Isle by Jack Kavanaugh. And Jack, I think you're wonderful. I'm so happy your name is Jack, because that's one of my favorite names. I love that name.
Thank you, Patsy. Thank you very much for having me on and talking about the book.
Well, you're delightful. I could have you on every week. I just love you.
Sure, yep.
Listen, you get us a deal with Kerrygold.
That's right. Yeah, we'll sponsor the program and away we go. Yep.
That's right. And you can do the commercial for them. Hey.
Fair enough.
My goodness. We'll be real winners there. Well, I think you're marvelous. And people should go to National Geographic Books. They can get the book there.
Or Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
And wherever books are sold. Because people should have this. And you have your book signing there. And Bloomsday is on June 16th.
June 16th,
and it's a wonderful day. It is so funny. You meet people from all over the world. I mean, I remember there were people from India. There were people from Japan.
That's right. It's remarkable. That's not an easy book to read, as you know, Patsy. It's in thick Dublinese. You know, we have to translate it.
I know. It is not easy, but I tell you, it is worth it, and it's wonderful. Mm. A wonderful destination. As I said, if I was going to Europe this year or in any year in the near future, it would be to Ireland. I would be heading.
Mm-hmm. Everyone should go to Ireland once in their life. That's my take on it, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Again, Jack, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. You
thank
are
you,
a joy.
Patty,
and I'm going to listen to this interview again just so I can listen to your voice. And what do you have, anything else you want to say? Something in Irish, maybe? A little Gaelic?
A little Gaelic. Well, I'll say Slán go fóill, which means bye for now. In other words, we're leaving the door open that we'll talk again, we'll see you again, and beg Fáilte oath in Éireann, which means you'll always be welcome in Ireland.
And we didn't mention St. Patrick's Day, my goodness.
And Patrick's Day, yep. This Friday.
Well, you have a wonderful time. You know, I love St. Patrick's Day for many reasons. And one is that I started my program 8 years ago on St. Patrick's Day in 2015. Now, what a lucky day it was for me, because
when you're still going strong.
When I started the program, it was very funny. Nobody thought I would last a month.
Well, you had the saint looking down on you, obviously. Yeah.
I did. And so, again, thank you. And again, you're just wonderful.
Thank you, Patsy. Thanks very much for having me. All the best.
Bye-bye.
Shalom.
Bye. Ah, 'tis a wonderful day, indeed. Always talking to Irishmen to put a smile on your face, that's for sure. That's for sure. Oh, what a guy. Jack Kavanaugh, and the book is Always Ireland. I'll hold it up to the camera. Anybody? You know, it's a Nat Geo book. How many times have I told you all that the best books to get and the best books to give as gifts, because a lot of holidays are coming up, Mother's Day, Father's Day, graduations, and of course, if you're getting together finally again for Easter, what a wonderful gift this is to bring to somebody's house. Always Ireland. It is full of joy, as Jack is. Bye-bye now.